Neil Curley was born in Barmara in 1934. He spent his first full season in the SANFL with West Adelaide in 1956.
You've got to try and win. And you've got to do everything humanly possible to help your teammate achieve that.
He led the Bloods to the 1961 flag against Norwood, known as the Turkish Bath Grand Final, played in 35 degree heat.
As you can see, Neil is a very tired player. How did you find conditions out there today, Neil?
Oh, the worst I've ever played under today. I was very hot and the ground was hard, and I think everyone was waiting for that final bell in the last quarter.
In 1964, he moved to South Adelaide, lifting them from bottom to premiers.
South Adelaide scoring a magnificent win. There is Curley, who's done a magnificent job to bring South Adelaide from bottom to top in one season.
He joined his third club, Glenelg, in 1967, going on to coach the Tigers and take them to a premiership in 1973.
Watching Neil Curley, he was in tears. Now, if anyone knows Neil Curley, he absolutely was in tears when he sat by the players right on the boundary line.
On field, he was known as one of the toughest players around.
What about the day that the Central District bloke broke your jaw?
Yeah, he hit me from behind when I was on the ground getting the ball. And I'm trying to move my jaw and it's making funny noises. And they said, you've got to come off, your jaw's broken. I said, well, fix it up, fix it. No mouth guards in those days.
So you played the second half of the broken jaw?
Yeah. I don't know, I just had this feeling that you don't leave the ground unless you've got a broken leg or something.
He was a prominent figure in the media, often appearing alongside his great mate, KG Cunningham.
The king, the man who made it all happen. Early days at the Crows, he was there in the Atco hut and doing the hard work. The one and only Donald Neil Curley.
Fiercely parochial, he was state captain and coach numerous times in the State of Origin heyday.
Have you got any regrets at all?
I think deep down I should have gone to Melbourne just for a couple of years. The reason I haven't gone is because I don't like Melbourne.
He became the Adelaide Crows inaugural football manager, assisting his friend Graham Corns.
Neil Curley has been a true mentor and a friend.
And eventually recruiting our very own Mark Ricciuto.
I went up to watch him play this day. He was 16.
Just turned 16 and my best mate ran in there and said, oh, Neil Curley's here to watch you. So I started getting nervous.
And he'd been playing centre-half-back. I thought, I want to go and have a look at this kid playing centre-half-back. So I rang his dad, Murray.
He'd organised with Dad to save a car park in where Dad parks.
Saved a place for me alongside the boundary to park my car. I had the esky full of beer because Murray liked to drink.
Curl's pulled up. He gets out. He's got an esky full of beer.
Oh, gee, I'm looking forward to the boy playing centre-half-back today.
Where's the lad playing today?
He said, no, he's not playing centre-half-back.
And Dad said, oh, he's playing in the forward pocket.
I said, forward pocket? I don't want to see him play forward pocket.
Oh, I didn't come up here all the way to watch a lad play in the forward pocket. Put him in the middle. Anyway, I played in the forward pocket.
Kicked 11.
Did he?
Yeah. Well, that night we emptied the esky. Murray.
Kel said, oh, bring him down to Adelaide next year. I think he'll be all right.
But we got the signature.
Neil Curley will be remembered as an icon and one of the most important figures in South Australia's rich football history.
Here with me every step of the way.
There are people outside of Victoria that can't play and coach.
The old ones are walking beside me.
We're not like that, girls.
Oh, bullshit.
Each and every step of the
way. How would you like to be remembered?
Yes, I would like to be remembered by a player who gave everything he had for his team and to try and win a footy match.
Neil Knuckles Curley. Interviewed by Jars and KG on Triple M's Dead Set Legends in 2014 when he just turned 80.
He is the king. He is the football, Mr. Football in South Australia.
He's a legend. He's an icon.
He is everything, KG. He's a beautiful man and he's loved and cherished and he's given us wonderful memories. You've been a big part of his life.
Oh, well, he's been a part of my life. Growing up as a West Adelaide supporter on the West End, I used to follow Westies as a seven-year-old kid. Yeah. And Kills was always a member. But it's been an amazing reception to this man's 80th birthday.
There he is. Oh, he celebrates this weekend. He's at the Alma today with about 80 to 90 friends.
He was in Melbourne yesterday.
He's Melbourne yesterday.
After all those years he built the Victorians.
Yeah,
he ate them.
Yeah.
And yet they threw a surprise party for him.
What? For the Victorians,
yeah.
Did? Well, he joins us on Dead Set Legends. An absolute pleasure. Neil Curley, welcome and thanks for your time, Knuckles.
G'day, you pair of larrikins. How are you?
How'd you pull up after last night's function over in Victoria? Do you still hate the Victorians, Knuckles?
No, you can't. You can't after what I've been through the last, say, 30 years with them over there. That's been absolutely... Actually, they're an amazing group. to turn from hating my guts years ago when I played to now, Christ giving me flowers and chocolates and wine and loving me. I can't believe it.
Kels, can I ask you, without being too personal, who was at the surprise party yesterday? Who were some of the big names there?
Well, actually, I've got a list on there. Elliot Barassi, Mike Sheehan, Des Tudnam, John Burns of Australia, David Parkin, John Shields, Sam Newman, Kevin Bartlett, Eddie McGuire, Stephen Kernahan, Steve Phillips, Bruce McAvaney, Gordon Bennett, Gil McLaughlin, Michael Brock, and David Hayes.
That must make you feel extra special when some of the biggest names in various sports in this country have seen fit to make time to celebrate with you your 80th birthday. That's a great honour, Knuckles.
Well, actually, I was embarrassed a little bit to think that she was. Like, I've arrived there and in the car, and I thought, what's all these people doing out? What are all those cameras for? What's going on here? What the hell? Get out the bloody way. I want to get in. And, of course, bang, then the penny dropped. And then we went into this beautiful, beautiful private room in the Savage Club, which was amazing. And we had a magnificent lunch that went for a long, long, long time. And then after lunch, to sit around, you know, in about with 10 guys in a big ring and just talking about old days and present days and things that could happen and things that should happen. And it was just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Kels, you've had some wonderful stories, and we've been playing some of your great funny stories where you and I shared the prize rooster at Rapid Bay that disappeared one morning. You did that job for us because he woke us up. What about the smashed coach's box window at Waverley Park? Who takes responsibility for that? Was that you or Graham Corns?
I took responsibility, but I didn't do it. Bloody Cornsy did it because I think it was our young wingman. Dave Marshall. Dave Marshall took a magnificent mark over one of the Victorians, and a bloody umpire penalised him for in the back.
That's right.
And Graham jumped up and he's hit it, and it was glass. It wasn't perspex, and it was glass, and he's hit it with his finger, broke his finger.
Yeah.
And, of course, it splattered out all over the people. So I've jumped up, and I said, my apologies. I said, I stood up, and Graham's pushed me on my elbow, connected with the glass, and if anybody's injured, we'll get a doctor down to you, blah, blah, blah. True. I had to say something, otherwise we got rejected.
Yeah.
And it worked. No, everything's okay. I hope your elbow's okay.
Who paid for the damages?
Well, I got no idea. I don't know if it was us. I don't think it was us because I heard nothing more about it. Because as you know, Graham had a short fuse. He'd explode, and I think he smashed about 4 telephones in his day, in the early days, and I said, well, you've done it again, you stupid bastard. You've got to go down on the boundary now and do it from down there.
Kels, it's true. Kels, can you tell us about the time where you accidentally bumped into KG when he umpired one of the games played with? What happened there? And you can't hit umpires.
He's bloody hopeless. I reckon he had tunnel vision. And he might have bounced the ball, and I was going for the knock.
Yeah.
And the ball went back. He did a yabby. He went backwards as he bounced it, like all umpires do. Yeah. And as he's gone back, the ball's bounced back over his head.
Yeah.
And it's hovering in the air.
Oh, no.
And I said, thank you, Lord. And then I went, and as I sort of half tripped, and as I palmed the ball, my elbow hit him right in the bloody jaw and dropped him cold. And, of course, he's lying on the ground. The bloody whistle's lying on the ground. The boundary umpires got hankies in those days, not whistles.
Yeah.
And we had no one to stop the game until one of the umpires ran out and blew his bloody whistle. And we stopped playing and they took him off. And
I remember that well.
Yeah, he found up for the grand final.
Kels, tell us about the day South Australia played Victoria when Colin Brown, a teammate, a former West Adelaide player, but a teammate, split Bobby Skilton's eye open at the Adelaide Oval. Tell us how that transpired.
Well, Colin Brown didn't even have a fly spanger a banger in his house because he wouldn't harm a fly. Beautiful little player. Sundays was his day, you know, for the man up above. he was coming in to get a ball, and Bobby Skilton was coming down low. He down low, bent over, and he collided, or he hit Colin Brown's knee, and it split his eye open a bit just before quarter time. Oh. And they've gone to the, you know, there's blood running everywhere, and they've gone into the quarter time huddle, and Whitten said, "Look, look what that bloody Curly did to Barnes. Look what he did. Look, he split Skilts' eye." And Skilts said, "Teddy, it wasn't Curls. Shut up. I don't know that. We'll get Curly. Well, I spent the next three quarters standing by the umpire.
Curls, Knuckles, look, this, you've coached thousands of players. You've won premierships as a coach and played as a coach and playing premierships. But who's the best footballer you've ever coached? Because you've had Peter Marker, you've had Studley Corns, Peter Carey, just to name a few.
That's one hell of a difficult question. You know, it's damn near impossible to answer. So many of those great champions that I was lucky enough to coach, they're just so close together. Mm. Like, and of course, don't forget that includes state players too that I coach.
Yep.
God almighty. Mm. You know, you've got, I guess, start with Robin as the most talented player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but you've got Blight so close to him. You've got Carmen so close to it. God, Carmen. And you've got Ebert so close.
Mm.
And then you've got blokes like, big blokes like Darley and Carey. And you've got blokes like Marker. And another bloke that people don't even rate at the moment, Kerry Hamilton, the 73 centre man for us, who was an unbelievably talented player. Oh, it's too hard. It's too hard.
Mm.
But I'm just fortunate enough to say that I've been lucky enough to coach a lot of great players.
It's been a wonderful career. This past week, they've highlighted everything that you've done in football. Can I ask you...
Staggering.
Well, it's been staggering, you're right. Can I ask you, as a person, you're a tough man. You've always done it your way. You're a self-made man, which I love. How would you like to be remembered by the football public as a footballer? How would you like to be remembered?
Well, I would like to remember by a player who gave everything he had for his team and to try and win a footy match.
How important was winning to you, Curls?
Well, that's what we go in we go to battle for. Like we don't go to battle to try and lose.
No.
We take the field, or in any sport, people strip off and get into their gear to try and win the contest. Now, if you don't go out there with that in mind, your males are not bloody go out there. You've got to try and win, and you've got to do everything you're humanly possible to help your teammate achieve that.
Curls, a day I'll never forget is the state game in the late 90s at the MCG. Your great mate and great rival as a player, EJ Whitten, was dying. He'd lost his sight, but he was determined to say goodbye to his fans, and he was driven around in a car with his son, Teddy Whitten Jr. He was blind, as I said. He embraced you this day, and that was one of the most emotional days that I've ever experienced in my life. The battles that you and Teddy had over the years, they're legendary, Kills. I can recall the one down in Hobart where he absolutely creamed you.
Did he ever? Right on the bloody nose. Of Oh, Jesus, that hurt too, I tell you. It was colder than a mother-in-law's kiss that day. There was ice on the railings.
There was.
By the living. Yes, did that hurt? That hurt.
Did you see it coming, Kills?
I smelled it coming. I did. Because I was looking over my shoulder trying to catch this ball some stupid bloody teammate of mine handballed to me. And I could smell him and hear him. And I just said, "Get over quick with Ted. Get it over quick." Whack, right on the bloody nose. I got a free kick, but holy hell. And I chased the bugger too.
Did you get him?
No, he stood alongside the umpire. No, well, that day, that was a very, very special day for me.
Yes.
And to be able to stop the car and go around and I heard young Ted say, it's Curls, it's Curls, Dad, it's Curls.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he come, you know, because he was nearly dead then, and he drew it all in and he said, ah, you know, in a big, strong voice, and oh, we're going to beat you today, we'll beat you today.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took all his effort to get there,
yeah.
Young Ted said. And, of course, he died a couple of weeks later.
Well, Kills, you saw him after that particular match at his home. Yeah. You paid a visit to him. Can you tell us exactly what transpired that day?
Well, I had to go to Princess Park. I was working with Channel 7. I had to go to Princess Park to do my normal stuff on the boundary. And I thought, I'll leave a bit early if not, and I'll shoot out in CEJ. So I went over the bridge and went to his home, which I knew where it was. And knocked on the door, and out came Val and
his wife.
And all of a sudden, a voice from one of the rooms said, "Who is it?" Val said, "It's Pearls. Tell the boss I'll come and get him." So,
and he was blind.
So I went. Val took me into the foyer, type of thing, and then took me to the entrance of the lounge room where EJ was, and he shuffled me across. He couldn't see, but of course he knew the whereabouts pretty well.
Yep.
And he came in close. He said, "You're getting closer, asshole. You're getting closer." and he sort of reached out, and I touched him. So then he grabbed me.
Yeah.
And you know, he used to bear bloody hug, and we sat down, and we started talking footy naturally, and blah 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 blah. And I'm looking at the clock, and I thought, "Gee whiz, I'm going to be late.
Yeah.
I got a fair way to go to Princess Park. God almighty. Ted, I've got to shut up. Sit down and wait. Just sit down and listen." I said, "Ted, I've got to go. I'm late." "And I can't see why you're in." And I said, "I've got to go." "You move and I'll get you." I said, "Oh, all right. So I sat there for a little while, and I arrived very late.
Yeah.
Very late. And the boss said to me, I had to tell him where I was. He said, "Well, that's okay, Curls. No problem."
So he died just after that?
He died, about 6 days after that. But what a man. He was the complete package. If you want to describe a footballer as a player that played for his heart out for himself, but also for his club and his team, he was a complete package. He could do it all. He could be brilliant. He could be inspirational. He could be damaging. He was a protector, a provider. He was unbelievable. He did a lot.
Kills, you're celebrating your 80th birthday today at the Alma. You've got about 80 close friends and guests, and we just want to say...
Yeah, you haven't got a few spare bob for me, have you?
Are you bringing your own liquor?
Hey, Kills, before you leave us, next Tuesday is a very, very special day in the Neil Curley household. Next Tuesday... you and your lovely wife, Barb, who was one of the loveliest ladies I've ever had the pleasure of meeting.
And one of the luckiest, by the way.
You will celebrate your 58th wedding anniversary. That is, can I ask you, on your honeymoon, you took her on a fishing trip on a little tinny.
Where'd you go?
Venus Bay, a very five-star hotel.
What?
Unbelievable.
So, wait.
Venus Bay?
Where is it?
It's a little place over on the peninsula. There was a general store and a church. That's about it. My uncle lived there. He was a professional fisherman. He took us out in his little boat.
Well, why don't you take Barbara to Paris or London or New York and celebrate instead of going to...
We've done all that.
So, it's your wedding anniversary, 58 years. Yeah. What are you doing?
I might add, if I could... 58 most glorious years with such a wonderful, wonderful person.
Mm.
How good is that?
Mm. Fantastic.
You got Mel crying now.
You've got him crying again, Kills.
What are you doing for what are you doing for Barb?
She may be listening. So, a
secret?
Surprise. Yeah, I think I'll take up river fishing.
Triple M remembers... Neil Knuckles Curley. Interviewed by Jars and KG on Triple M's Dead Set Legends in 2014 when he'd just turned 80.